Welcome to Outdoors Radio with Dan Small, your source for the latest hunting and fishing information. Brought to you by LakeLink, your online fishing resource at lake-link.com.
Outdoors Radio is also brought to you by Professional Hearing Care, LLC of Mauston, La Crosse, Westby, and Fitchburg, profhearingcare.com. By the Castle Rock Peatonwell Lakes Association, 60 square miles of fun on the water, castlerock-peatonwell.com. And by Woodside Ranch Resort and Conference Center, woodsideranch.com. I'm Dan Small. Today we'll learn about the impending hatch of the 17-year cicada brood, and we'll learn about the Nisida Outdoor Adventure Club. All that and more coming up on Outdoors Radio, so stay right there. If you're ever in a motor vehicle accident, call Hupie and Abraham, named Best Personal Injury Law Firm by the Wisconsin Law Journal year after year. The firm of Hupie and Abraham has collected more than $1 billion for its clients. In fact, they collect millions of dollars every month for hundreds of satisfied clients. Call the firm voted best and rated best, Hupie and Abraham, 800-800-5678, or visit hupie.com. And all 11 offices of Hupie and Abraham in Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois are open for business. Well, Jeff Kelm is off again this week. He's in Sturgeon Bay for the Sturgeon Bay Bass Open. Our schedules have been pretty crazy for the last couple of weeks, so I'm flying solo again. I think we'll be back together next week for the Memorial Weekend show. And then we'll find out how those tournaments are going and how his son Robert's turkey season is going, and maybe Jeff's as well. My son John and I hunted turkeys in Dunn and Chippewa counties and on John's property in Bayfield County last week. It's the best season we've ever had. John got a bird in Chippewa County, and he and I each got one in Bayfield County, and his friend Blake Gross also got his first turkey ever, and we shot all three of them in the same field where they'd been displaying for some time. So we had a great season, and it's not over yet. I've got a turkey permit for Zone 4 for this week, and I might get one for Zone 1 for next week if I've got any energy left. Well, we're up to 7 lambs on the ground with only Dolly. She's our oldest Shetland ewe, still carrying lambs. She'll probably have twins, which will make 9 in all, but she might surprise us with triplets. And remember, whenever you want to start a flock, just let me know. I know Jeff has been talking about that for a couple of years, but we'll see if he can pull the trigger this year. Well, there are only 2 spots left for my Lake of the Woods trip in September, so if you're interested, visit blackisland.com soon to grab those 2 spots. We'll enjoy 4 nights of lodging in private cabins on a private island, 3 full days of guided fishing. Our guides prepare shore lunch with the walleyes that we catch. We have resort-quality breakfasts and dinners in the lodge, storytelling around the campfire at night, and if we're lucky, we'll see the northern lights. Last year, the northern lights we saw were really spectacular, actually better than the ones that we saw this past week here in southern Wisconsin. Again, blackisland.com for details, and I hope you can join me. Coming up, Phil Pelletieri, retired director of the Insect Diagnostic Lab at the University of Wisconsin, talks about the 17-year cicada brood that should start showing up in southeast Wisconsin and northern Illinois any day now. And outdoor writer Mark Walters updates us on activities at the Nisida Outdoor Adventure Club. All that and more straight ahead on Outdoors Radio.
Are you putting off treating your hearing loss for you or a loved one because you can't afford it? Hi, I'm Dr. Laura Venipal from Professional Hearing Care, and I'm telling you that you couldn't be further away from the truth. I believe that everyone should have access to hearing health care and improve cognitive health, and that's why we offer our affordable treatment plan. Our team is dedicated to taking the stigma and cost of hearing loss out of the picture. For a free consultation, call 608-292-4916 or visit our website at www.profhearingcare.com.
The Midwest's largest fishing website, lake-link.com, is your online fishing resource. 90% of LakeLink's features are yours to use free of charge, and members get access to LakeLink's online lake map library, lets you get GPS coordinates of any spot on the lake, and export waypoints to your onboard electronics. Members also get free outdoor classified ads, discounts on online store merchandise, and a whole lot more. You can also listen to Outdoors Radio 24/7 on LakeLink. listen to this week's show, catch any of our past shows, subscribe to our podcast, or even sign up for our weekly e-newsletter so you'll know in advance what's coming up right here. Just type in the keyword radio. See what you've been missing. Log on to lake-link.com today. That's lake-link.com.
Castle Rock and Peyton Well are two of Wisconsin's largest inland lakes. With more than 60 square miles of water, they offer four seasons of outdoor fun. Halfway between the Twin Cities and Chicago, and just minutes from Wisconsin Rapids and the Dells, you'll enjoy family-friendly resorts and campgrounds, great fishing, bike trails, county, state, and national parks, and the Nisida National Wildlife Refuge. Learn more at CastleRock-Petenwell.com or on Facebook at Castle Rock Petenwell Lakes Association.
For the nonprofit Ruffed Grouse Society, the well-being of the ruffed grouse and American woodcock is a special priority. But the Society's conservation work benefits more than just these two game birds. The organization's programs help a long list of other young forest wildlife, including songbirds that must have thick, brushy habitat to survive. For more information about forest wildlife habitat management, contact the Ruffed Grouse Society toll-free at 888-JOIN-RGS.
Welcome back to your source for the latest hunting and fishing information, Outdoors Radio with Dan Small.
Welcome back to Outdoors Radio. I'm Dan Small. You've probably heard by now that this is the year two broods of cicadas that have been living underground for 13 and 17 years, respectively, will emerge as adults here in Wisconsin and in many parts of the U.S. this spring and summer. And joining me now to talk about cicadas is entomologist Phil Pelletieri. He's a retired director of the Insect Diagnostic Lab at the University of Wisconsin College of Agricultural and Life Sciences. Retired, but still very active. Phil, thanks so much for joining us, and welcome back to the Outdoors Radio Network.
Thank you, Dan.
Now, it's been a long time since you and I talked, and before we started recording, you reminded me that you shot with two of our producers for Outdoor Wisconsin, Linda Cieslick and Nancy Frank, stories on the, I think it was the 17-year brood of cicadas, 17 and 34 years ago, respectively, right?
1990 was the first one I shot, and then we shot the other one in 2007, both down in Lake Geneva, which was about as dramatic an experience as you can expect, so much so that I even dragged a neighbor down to show what was going on.
So the fact that those 17-year cicadas and the 13-year cicadas are both emerging this year, that's pretty rare, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the math, it's about once every 200 and I think 5 or 7 years that you get the concurrence. Now, we only have the 17-year brood up here in Wisconsin, and it is also really high populations in northern Illinois, so it gets a lot of press. The 13-year brood goes from central Illinois and then eastward and covers a lot more states. And so that combination of so much activity has gotten a lot of people enamored, and a lot of stories have shown up in this past month or so about what's going on right now, really, in some places.
And when are they going to emerge?
Oh, they're probably already starting to come out. I remember back in 1990, I had some people in the Mazamani area that were showing me pictures of what looked like little volcanoes coming out of the ground, and those were the nymphs coming out. But they didn't see the critters at that time, and I was a little bit reluctant because I was not aware of a population that direction, but it turned out that was the first emergences, and it was about this time, maybe even a week earlier than this. So they're starting to go, but they're not out in numbers yet, and they're not making the noise yet, but that will probably be happening within the next 10 days or so. And then it will be pretty loud for most of the end of May and well into the first 2 weeks of June.
And for people who don't really know anything about these insects, what are they doing and why are they making noise?
It's a mating call. And I think people are familiar with what we call the dog day cicada, which we have critters out every year. They end up in July and August, and you hear this kind of humming and buzzing in the trees.
Yes.
It turns out different species of cicadas have different calls. In fact, you can even go on the internet. And for the dog day cicadas, honestly, there's more than one species, and if you look at them visually, they're very difficult to tell apart, but the calls are very distinctive. There's one species called a scissor grinder is a common name. You hear more in Nebraska and Iowa, but I have even heard it in southern Wisconsin. I think people might be familiar with that one, but the 17 variety, You know, it's only in certain locations it shows up. If you were there historically and it happened in your neighborhood, you will not forget it. But I think the one thing that I've been a little concerned about in some of the reports I've seen is they, you know, they kind of suggest that the whole state's going to be overrun, and it's not like that at all.
Where are they going to emerge? You said southern Wisconsin, Lake Geneva area.
Yeah, Lake Geneva is where I know the strongest population here. You're going to see a lot of reporting down in the Chicago area and the forest preserves and some of those areas where their numbers are very high. But interesting enough, all along the Wisconsin River, there is activity. And aside from Mazamani, I was surprised an area that I do some hunting in when I got out there in 2007, was walking around. It was more the middle of June. I could hear some singing, but the other telltale activity you can pick up is when the females lay their eggs, they inject them into small twigs. And there is so much activity with that that they literally cause those twigs to die. We call it flagging, where you get, you know, the last 6 inches of a branch browning.
Sure.
And if you were to go up with that, you would see the slit, and inside the slit, the individual eggs that are laid. And again, what caught my attention out in the Avoca area was how many trees had this flagging going on. But I was a little bit late to see the peak of the adult population at that time.
And you also, if you know where to look for them, you find the shells or the outer skin or exoskeleton, whatever it is, of the young ones that emerge before the adults pop out and start flying around, right?
Yeah, they're kind of a yellowish brown. They almost look plastic-like.
Mm-hmm.
And so the nymphs crawl up, usually hang onto a trunk of a tree, but you can see them on fence posts. You might even see them on the siding of a house. And they literally split right down the back. And then the adult emerges, and at that point, its body is quite soft. Within a couple of hours, it hardens, and it also takes on a very distinctive color. The thing about the 17- and 13-year cicadas is they have extremely bright red eyes, a black body, and an almost an orangish-golden venation in the wings. So they're really quite attractive. Now, our dog day cicada is quite a bit more drab. It's a little bit bigger critter. It is kind of a dark green and black modeling to it, and is not near as photogenic as the 17 and 13-year populations.
I remember the dog day cicadas as a kid. I grew up in western New York, and we would catch them, and it's the males that have those plates on their underside that vibrate, and you could catch them. You could actually pick them up and hold them, and they'd be buzzing and vibrating in your hand.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. And the thing that will come out when the 17-year comes out because of the numbers, the sound they make in unison is almost deafening. I've heard the equivalent to an airplane taking off. And if you've experienced it, you know, I know a lot of people get quite annoyed for the 2 or 3 weeks that it's going on. The good news is, again, it's going to be 17 years before they're annoyed again.
Now, aside from the noise, which can be annoying, and the damage to young trees or to thin branches, what other impact might they have on other wildlife, insects, birds, mammals, us even?
Well, it's a great food source. In fact, and people do eat them. I remember when we were doing one of the shoots on Lake Geneva that there were people collecting them to cook up. That is something that probably most people won't warm up to.
Probably not.
But in general wildlife, I mean, it is a great protein source. The only problem for the birds and other things that utilize them is that, you know, if it only happens once every 17 years, you can't depend on it. But it's kind of like a special bonus for those things that are willing to eat them because they are so cover the ground. I mean, if you've been in the right spot, it is amazing. And I'm sure you can see, you know, stuff on the internet where people are filming it where it's mind-boggling, the sheer numbers. You look at the ground and there might be as many as 8 to 10 emergence holes per square foot.
Mm.
And you take that over a wide area, you can see that the sheer numbers are staggering.
Do you have any recipes?
Well, the trick you often find is people like to put garlic and fry things up with oil, and so I think that gives quite a bit of combination. I definitely would pull the wings and some of the harder parts away from it, but yeah, I think it's one of those things you might call an acquired taste.
Yeah. Why do they emerge every 17 years or 13 years? What's the strategy for that population?
And whether it's the truth or not, you think about most animals have predators and parasites they go after them. Well, if you can string out your life cycle this long, as I said, things can't depend on you or concentrate on you as their primary food source. So that's one of the theories. What's interesting is, you know, we have, I think, 15 broods or different populations. There's a couple years that they have disappeared, that historically they were around 150 years ago. lot of that has to do with land use change. And generally the 13-year varieties are more common south, the 17-year varieties are more common north. It makes sense, but is that really what's going on? I'm not totally convinced. It may just be some of these quirks of nature, the way things evolve, and it worked out this way for them.
Mm-hmm. So is there any concern that we should have? Is there any environmental impact or damage to property that humans should worry about?
The only thing is, if you've got young fruit trees in your yard, you might consider putting some netting on or whatnot to keep them off. Because as I said, they will set them back a little bit with the damage. Won't kill them, but will definitely set them back. But other than that, no. And again, for big trees and the like, it's really not a concern. But visually, it catches your attention. And again, people who don't like insects, this is not going to be an easy time for them. Because, as I said, it's just constant, and they're everywhere for that 4 to 5 week activity of the adults. But I think more often than not, a lot of people are just kind of amazed at this. And this is one of the experiences you remember for the rest of your life.
Well, Phil, we've got to take a break here. Will you stick with us? I want to talk a little more about cicadas and then something about ticks that I know is going on too. Maybe we can talk briefly about that.
Sure, sounds good.
Folks, I'm talking with Phil Pelletieri, retired director of the Insect Diagnostic Lab at UW College of Ag and Life Sciences. And he's an entomologist, and we will be back with more with Phil right after this. I'm Dan Small. You're listening to Outdoors Radio.
Listen to more Outdoors Radio online at dansmalloutdoors.com. Welcome back to Outdoors Radio with Dan Small.
Welcome back to Outdoors Radio. I'm Dan Small. I'm talking with Phil Pelletieri. He's the retired director of the Insect Diagnostic Lab at the University of Wisconsin College of Ag and Life Sciences. He's an entomologist. We're talking about cicadas, and Phil, the cicadas are going to be part of a research project that's going on now. Tell us about that.
One of the things we have to rely on is museum records of critters that we've caught. And I know PJ Leish, who is now the director of the Insect Diagnostic Lab, and I explain as the new and improved Phil, because PJ does a great job, is trying to get people to document where they're seeing activity. So we have a little bit better measurement of exactly what areas they're active this time around. And if you look at things historically, because they really need more permanent wooded situations, land use patterns of the last 100 years has made a dramatic effect. You know, agricultural land and whatnot is not where they would thrive at all. So what PJ is trying to do with the department is get a better handle and see if we've got some activity in areas that we didn't expect. And as I said, what I found when I was running the lab is there was a lot more activity along the Wisconsin River than I was expecting.
Okay, and are citizens involved in this, or is it organized research by the university?
PJ has a website on cicadas, and you can report when you see them, where you see them, those kind of things, and that will be archived so that, again, we've got a better database of what to expect in the future.
Where would we find that?
You can just go Insect Diagnostic Lab. He's got a menu there that you can go on cicadas, or you can do a search on Wisconsin cicadas. That would probably get you to PJ's site, too. He's really got a lot of more specific information, little maps showing you some of the spots that we have records of already. Talks a little bit, again, more about the biology and the like, and as I said, is looking to see if we can expand our understanding of the activity, and then the other side of it, you know, if there seems to be places where it's disappeared, and that's always a concern.
Okay, and I understand that there's some research going on with ticks as well.
Well, that the Marshfield Clinic is running probably the biggest thing. I do have a colleague, Dr. Susan Paskowitz, who is a medical entomologist who has worked with Lyme disease for about the last 25 years and done quite a bit. But what they're doing up at Marshfield is they're having people sending in ticks that they catch, and then they're analyzing them for the various diseases that ticks are capable of transmitting. And you know, the one thing that I witnessed in my career, because the black-legged, or what we often call deer ticks, didn't show up until the early 70s in the state, and then watching Lyme disease progress into a major concern. But there's a whole list of other diseases that ticks are capable of picking up from, especially rodents, and then potentially transmitting. And so this is just a way of getting more of a baseline. And boy, it seems about every 2 to 3 years we get a report of a new organism that we didn't know existed that the ticks were capable of transmitting. And it's primarily the black-legged or deer tick that seems to be the stinker here, although wood ticks are capable of spreading some diseases, but it is much less of a concern. One of the intriguing things is wood ticks are capable of spreading Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and the number of cases of Rocky Mountain spotted fever in the last 40 years is like 12 in the state. I mean, it's just minuscule, but if you go into places like Oklahoma or North Carolina, it really is quite prevalent.
Wow. Now, these are called co-infections, I think, aren't they? Because they often go along with the Lyme disease, which is the primary concern of tick bites.
Right, but we have an anaplasmosis, we have an erucolosis. To be honest, there's another variety of mouse, quote, variety of Lyme disease. There is a Pelosian virus. It just seems the more we study it, the more that's going on. And as I said, the ticks are the perfect bridge for taking wildlife and transmitting to other animals.
Because they bite both wildlife and people, is that it?
Right, and scientifically it's so intriguing that what we call a wood tick, but it's technically the American dog tick, feeds on an infected mouse. It is not capable of transmitting it the next time it feeds, but the black-legged or deer tick is. And so that, again, is an intriguing question. Why doesn't it work in both cases? Because they're both bringing infected blood into their body, but in one case they can send it out, in the other case they can't.
Now, how can people learn more about this research or participate? In other words, catch a tick and mail it in.
I think I would check up with Marshfield Clinic because that's the research group that's doing it. That's not associated with the university per se, as far as I'm aware of.
Uh-huh.
You know, and historically, we've done this before. Gunderson Clinic back in La Crosse early on was quite active in Lyme. These medical facilities really are great, both because they get all the people exposures and experiences. And again, Marshfield has done quite a bit of research in a number of areas. And in this one, it will be interesting to see when it's all said and done where our baseline is. I would expect we're definitely going to see some stuff we didn't expect.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, ticks are not insects, of course. Cicadas are. And I want to ask you about the apparent general decline of insects, at least in Wisconsin. In the summer, we used to drive anywhere in the summer, and you'd have to clean your windshield, especially if you drive at dusk when some of the evening bugs are flying. And I've run into a few hatches of lake flies this year over in the Coudray area a week or so ago. And I think Lake Winnebago, there are these lake flies that have been notorious for years and years. But is it true, or is it just my perception, that insect numbers are declining?
For the last 20 years plus. I remember reading a study out of Germany where they had been trapping insects for about 45 or 50 years in some natural settings. And then when they looked at it again, they could see a decline. A similar study was done in the Caribbean islands where, you know, again, there were some remote areas that really hadn't been disturbed. But over time, as they're looking what insects are active and what the numbers are going down, and we've all experienced it. I mean, I know we've changed the kind of lights we have for street lights, but I remember as a kid looking up and it was just a cloud of moths and stuff. You don't see that anymore. It's been pretty much documented that there has been a decline. You know, some people will argue how big that decline is, 10%, 30%. But to me, there's no question that things have changed quite dramatically. And a lot of things have been pointed at, you know, land uses, chemicals, climate change, and it's probably a little bit of all of that stuff going on. It really, of course, is a concern because insects have been the dominant life form for well before people showed up and were expected to be down the road. But they're so important for birds and other wildlife as far as food sources and the like, and pollinating. And I mean, the world depends on insects. And so when you see declines, it definitely raises concerns.
And I remember reading somewhere or hearing somewhere that the combined biomass of insects worldwide is greater than the biomass of other animals and humans. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, no question. When you look at a place like Wisconsin, we have about 25 to 30,000 different species of insects.
Wow.
There's no other organism. I don't know, maybe the bacteria. You know, I'm not enough versed on the number of species, but I don't think they've got those kind of numbers. And entomologists always talk about if somebody came from outer space and looked, and you sample what's going on here, your conclusion would be that insects are the dominant life form.
Wow. And yet they're tiny, and it's just the sheer numbers that add up to more mass than anything else, I guess.
Right. Definitely, you know, and you got things even like ants. I mean, you don't pay much attention to, but when you figure out how many ants are in a colony and the sheer mass, it really is amazing.
Well, to wrap this up, should we be concerned about this decline? I mean, what can we do?
I think there's been a lot of interest, you know, with some of the pollinator studies and pollinator plots and other things that people have recognized. In some cases, it's habitat improvement, and they are doing things to favor certain groups of insects, so that's good news. They're always studying, again, the reasons, and if it turns out there are particular chemicals that are quite problematic, again, I've been doing this long enough, there is a whole litany of chemicals that were available when I first started as an entomologist that have been taken away because of environmental concerns.
Sure.
And so people continue to look at those things and make hopefully good decision, scientific decisions on things that we can't afford to use because of their potential side effects.
So you're optimistic?
Yeah, in the long run. You know, things always change. One of the things that always impressed me was the sheer number of southern insects that now are found in Wisconsin because of the change in climate. And I've teased a lot of times when I've done public radio that the governor moved us to Missouri 15 years ago and didn't tell us. But I can come up with a list of well over 100 insects that showed up in Wisconsin that weren't here when I started in 1978. And again, it's typically some of these southern things that are extending their range because of the lack of cold weather in the winter.
Uh-huh. Well, Phil, fascinating conversation as always. I'm looking forward to hearing those cicadas. You know, I'm out of the main area, so I may have to travel to the Wisconsin River or over to Lake Geneva to hear them, but I'm sure a lot of folks in those areas are going to have their ears ringing this summer.
Yeah, I would suggest to people it is well worth the trip. It really is. You know, find a place that they're very active. Again, if you're going down into northern Illinois, there'll be plenty of places there, too, to look at. But you do have to kind of search them out, and you can't expect them to show up in your backyard if they weren't there 17 years ago.
Got it. All right. Well, Phil, thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of the spring and summer, and I'm sure you're going to be going to listen to some of those cicadas yourself.
Definitely.
All right. We'll talk again.
Okay. You take care, Dan.
You bet. Thank you. Phil Pelletieri, retired director of the Insect Diagnostic Lab at the University of Wisconsin College of Agricultural and Life Sciences. You can learn more. Just search Wisconsin Cicadas or Marshfield Clinic Tick Study. You'll find information on some of the things we talked about. I'm Dan Small. More Outdoors Radio right after this.
Enjoy the ultimate shooting experience at the Range of Richfield, your one-stop shop for all shooters. Just north of the Richfield Cabela's store on Helson Drive, the Range of Richfield offers 12 state-of-the-art 25-yard indoor shooting lanes for all pistol and common rifle loads, classes in home defense, basic handgun and concealed carry, a retail shop, trophy mount display, and more in a welcoming, family-friendly setting. Open daily except Monday to the public and members. Your ultimate shooting experience, therangewi.com.
Here's a message from our friends at Remy Battery in Milwaukee, Waukesha, Escanaba, and Houghton. As we continue strong into almost 100 years of providing our community with high-quality batteries, we want to thank all of our customers and friends we have made over the years. We invite you to visit our newest location on Sunset Drive in Waukesha, formerly Challenger Battery. We have batteries from the largest military crafts and industrial machinery to alkalines and the smallest hearing aids. Big and small, we have them all. Stop in for a free battery and electrical check before you hit the road, trails, or the waters. Don't forget to ask our sales representatives about volume pricing. Call Remy at 414-384-0340 or visit online at remybattery.com for all your battery and battery accessory needs.
If your rifle, shotgun, handgun, or muzzleloader needs work this season, call Roger Williams at Northern Magnetic LLC. A licensed professional gunsmith for over 35 years, Roger can repair, customize, rebarrel, install sights and scope mounts, and more on all firearms makes and models. When you need a professional gunsmith, call Roger at 262-339-1798 or visit fixguns.com. That's 262-339-1798 or fixguns.com.
For the nonprofit Ruffed Grouse Society, the well-being of the ruffed grouse and American woodcock is a special priority. But the Society's conservation work benefits more than just these two game birds. The organization's programs help a long list of other young forest wildlife, including songbirds that must have thick, brushy habitat to survive. For more information about forest wildlife habitat management, contact the Ruffed Grouse Society toll-free at 888-JOIN-RGS.
Welcome back to your source for the latest hunting and fishing information. Outdoors Radio with Dan Small.
Thanks for joining us on Outdoors Radio. I'm Dan Small. Castle Rock and Peatonwell Flowages and Juneau County offer four seasons of outdoor recreation, and those are two of Wisconsin's largest inland lakes. There are also many miles of river, hiking and biking trails, and much more in Juneau County. For more information, you can visit castlerock-peatonwell.com. And joining us now is Mark Walters. Mark is the founder and president of Kids and Mentors Outdoors, and that's KAMO, and their website is Camo Kids, KAMO Kids.org. He has a syndicated column. He's an outdoor writer. It's called An Outdoorsman's Journal. It appears every week in many newspapers throughout Wisconsin, and you can read them online at outdoorsmansjournal.com. And if that wasn't enough, he helped create the Nisida Outdoor Adventure Club, and they have a Facebook page, Nisida Outdoor Adventure Club. Well, Mark, thanks for joining us, and welcome back to Outdoors Radio.
Hi, Dan.
I think last year we talked to you right after the Nisida Outdoor Adventure Club had been formed, and you've been busy doing a lot of work there, haven't you?
Yes, I have, as well as several other people in the community. When we first started it 14 months ago, Tanya Kotelowski, who's the school administrator at Nisida Public Schools, got a hold of me and said, Mark, I want you to help me start a club where we can bring our community together in an outdoor way for people young and old. I said, sure, we can do this. Some of my original ideas were we need ice skating for kids, we need a beach, we need a sledding hill, and then some ideas that came along afterwards from people, a dog park and disc golf. And the disc golf, very, very popular. And I write this column, it's in 60 papers, pretty well known in this area. But what really, really helped get NOAAD, Nisida Outdoor Adventure Club, going so strong is there's a community Facebook page. I write a post about every 2 weeks, and it goes through Tanya, and she puts it on that community page, and it's very, very popular. And what I do is I tell where we're at, I tell what's working, what might not be working, and our hopes and dreams, and it has just really pulled the people in Nisida together. Last year we went through the permitting process with the town board and then with the Department of Natural Resources and created a real nice beach right in town. We made a nice ice skating rink last winter, right where the beach is. It was a tough winter for ice skating, as we all know, but we had one real nice skate party there. We would have had several more if we had better ice. We even got lights down there, dusk to dawn, that we can set them. We can run until 10 at night. Very, very popular. When you put an ice skating rink in a community, you find out how many people want to skate. I skate, and I made a deal with myself. If I can help create this, I'm going to get new skates, and I just love skating. And yeah, we had our first skating party, which was our only one, unfortunately, but we had 65 people. And every time we have an event, we have hot dogs, brats, chips and water and s'mores. And in the winter, we have hot cocoa. And it just brings people from all over.
Now, this was Tanya's idea.
Well, Tanya, like Nisida, everyone knows it. We are super blessed to have Tanya Kotelowski as our school administrator. She's just an incredible woman that knows how to get things done, and that's just a fact. Everybody knows it. And she's also very smart. And the idea was to make Nisida a better community, because there wasn't a ton going on for kids other than the basic computer, family, school sports. That's all good, but it's nice to have some other options. And what we're doing is we're creating options in town where kids can walk or ride their bikes to do it. The skating rink, the beach, the disc golf course that we're going through the process right now. We raised a whole bunch of money. Oh, we raised about $21,000 in 2 weeks for doing the disc golf course. That's a whole another story. It's a big story, too, as far as if you're from Nisida, a lot of work and all, you know, but it's going to be real popular. We've got some hardcore disc golf enthusiasts that have taken charge on that.
So where is all this happening? Where is it located?
Okay, well, the beach is right in town at the stoplights, the only satellites in town, at Old Mill Park. And the disc golf course is on the west edge of town. You're basically in town, but it's on the west edge of it. The street that is on the west edge of town.
Okay. So everything is at one or the other of those two locations?
Yes, and then we'd really like to do a sledding hill. We have a great bluff here in town. Everyone can see it from 6-8 miles away. And that would be down the road. As strong as we are and as much as we get done, there's only 4 or 5 of us that are the movers and the pushers, and then we have volunteers. So a project between the labor, the money, and the permitting, you just have to do one at a time. And right now at our beach, we built the beach last year. Everyone in that town realized how popular it was going to be, and now we're building a retaining wall. We're in the process of it right now, a lot of brickwork. We're pouring cement, and we're putting real nice picnic tables. It's going to be a real nice picnic area. That's on my table, or should I say agenda, right now, probably yet this afternoon, some of that kind of work, some more of that. And that's at Old Mill Park. If we were to do a dog park after we get some of this stuff done, which I'm sure we will, that would be in another part of town. But everything is in the village limits.
All right. And you have a fundraiser coming up soon, don't you?
Yes, we do, on June 4th. We did 2 last year. We call them Beach Bash. And it's just simple. It's just a town picnic is all it is. And we do it on weeknights. We do almost all of our stuff on weeknights because all of us are so busy. And weeknights, we're more free. And so it's not such a bummer as far as 2 months from now, you just tied up another Saturday, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
And people just come and hang out for 2 or 3 hours. And we have a local DJ that always plays. He just plays nice music, you know, a nice background, and people bring chairs, and people just visit. And we had 4 at my house before we were organized as we are now. I live out in the country, and we did all kinds of fun things, and we always have a campfire, and it's just a real good organization. It's kind of, for anybody that was alive in the 60s and 70s, reminds you of, like, 1978.
No,
like
kidding.
I think that's what Tanya was shooting for, just to bring the community together. And everything is free as far as what we're creating. You can go play disc golf for free. You can go ice skate for free. You can go swimming for free. You know, another good part about it.
Absolutely. Well, tell us again about this fundraiser, June 4th. What's the time and where exactly is that?
June 4th, and I believe it's 5:30 to 7:30. It'll go later because it'll be a nice spring night towards the end of spring there. It'll just be some brats, hot dogs, chips, and water. But people will just visit. There'll probably be a DJ. We haven't for sure secured that, but he's never turned us down. And especially if you have anything to do with the community or you want to get to know some people from the area and just come and no expectations, just come and visit. I'd suggest bringing a lawn chair, but there are probably 8 or 10 picnic tables there. And bring your swimming suit. We came up with the money last summer. We've got buoys and we got a raft, swim raft, and it's a nice, simple little place to go and just to kind of hang out.
Fantastic. Well, before we let you go, CAMO, Kids and Mentors Outdoors, is the organization that you founded more than a decade ago now. What's going on with that group?
Kids and Mentors Outdoors is rocking. COVID slowed us down, but it sure didn't kill us. Our Meadow Valley chapter, just last Thursday night, we had the same type of picnic we're having on June 4th, and we had 100 people there. My golden retrievers got a litter of pups. They were only 9 days old, but I bought them there. It was like a little petting zoo and had yard games, campfire, s'mores. But CAMO, there's 6 chapters in Wisconsin spread throughout the state. We're doing all hunting, fishing, silent sports. That's for kids, you know, but with adult mentors. And we can always use for both these organizations more people, that's for sure. More kids, more adults, and even cash, too, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
Not like a corporation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Mark,
yeah.
Thank you so much. And, you know, kudos to you for all your hard work and the accomplishment that now this club has been going on for a year. It's a going thing. It's really happening, isn't it?
It's truly, truly loved in Nisida. And even people that are 85, 90 years old, because where we put the beach, they used to have a beach until about 35 years ago. And then it just became a swamp, total swamp.
Mm.
But the people in town that are 50 to 100 years old swam there, took their swimming lessons there, and then it became an absolute 100% swamp, which is okay too, it's good wetlands. But we went through the process of getting that permit to put it there. And so you have that older generation, actually a couple generations there, maybe even three, that are so happy to see that come back. And then you have the younger ones that are like, hey, we got a beach.
Cool. Well, Mark, we're going to let you go. Keep up the great work, and we will catch up with you again maybe later this summer and see how things are going.
Thank you, Dan.
You're quite welcome. Well, folks, if you want to learn more, you can find the Nisida Outdoor Adventure Club on Facebook. You can learn more about Camo at Camo Kids, and that's with K's, KAMOKids.org, and you can read Mark's column in 60 newspapers throughout the state or online at outdoorsmansjournal.com. This was brought to you by the Castle Rock Petenwell Lakes Association, 60 square miles of fun on the water, castlerock-petenwell.com. I'm Dan Small. More Outdoors Radio right after this.
Castle Rock and Petenwell are two of Wisconsin's largest inland lakes. With more than 60 square miles of water, they offer four seasons of outdoor fun. Halfway between the Twin Cities and Chicago, and just minutes from Wisconsin Rapids and the Dells, you'll enjoy family-friendly resorts and campgrounds, great fishing, bike trails, county, state, and national parks, and the Nisida National Wildlife Refuge. Learn more at castlerock-petenwell.com or on Facebook at Castle Rock Petenwell Lakes Association.
Are you putting off treating your hearing loss for you or a loved one because you can't afford it? Hi, I'm Dr. Laura Venipal from Professional Hearing Care, and I'm telling you that you couldn't be further away from the truth. I believe that everyone should have access to hearing health care and improve cognitive health, and that's why we offer our affordable treatment plan. Our team is dedicated to taking the stigma and cost of hearing loss out of the picture. For a free consultation, call 608-292-4916 or visit our website at www.profhearingcare.com.
Enjoy the ultimate shooting experience at the Range of Richfield, your one-stop shop for all shooters. Just north of the Richfield Cabela's store on Helson Drive, the Range of Richfield offers 12 state-of-the-art 25-yard indoor shooting lanes for all pistol and common rifle loads, classes in home defense, basic handgun and concealed carry, a retail shop, trophy mount display, and more in a welcoming, family-friendly setting. Open daily except Monday to the public and members. Your ultimate shooting experience, therangewi.com. If your rifle, shotgun, handgun, or muzzleloader needs work this season, call Roger Williams at Northern Magnetic LLC. A licensed professional gunsmith for over 35 years, Roger can repair, customize, rebarrel, install sights and scope mounts, and more on all firearms makes and models. When you need a professional gunsmith, call Roger at 262-339-1798 or visit fixguns.com. That's 262-339-1798 or fixguns.com.
For the nonprofit Ruffed Grouse Society, the well-being of the ruffed grouse and American woodcock is a special priority. But the Society's conservation work benefits more than just these two game birds. The organization's programs help a long list of other young forest wildlife, including songbirds that must have thick, brushy habitat to survive. For more information about forest wildlife habitat management, contact the Ruffed Grouse Society toll-free at 888-JOIN-RGS.
The Midwest's largest fishing website, lake-link.com, is your online fishing resource. 90% of Lake Link's features are yours to use free of charge. And members get access to Lake Link's online lake map library, lets you get GPS coordinates of any spot on the lake, and export waypoints to your onboard electronics. Members also get free outdoor classified ads, discounts on online store merchandise, and a whole lot more. You can also listen to Outdoors Radio 24/7 on Lake Link. Listen to this week's show, catch any of our past shows, subscribe to our podcast, or even sign up for our weekly e-newsletter so you'll know in advance what's coming up right here. Just type in the keyword radio. See what you've been missing. Log on to lake-link.com today. That's lake-link.com.
Welcome back to Outdoors Radio with Dan Small.
Welcome back to Outdoors Radio. I'm Dan Small. We're brought to you by Cedar Lake Sales on Highway 33 West in West Bend and on the web at cedarlakesales.com. They have more than 45 fishing boats from Crestliner, Yarcraft and Camus on display, and spring savings promotions are still going on. Check their website for details. We're also brought to you by Professional Hearing Care, LLC of Mauston, La Crosse, Westby, and Fitchburg, profhearingcare.com, and by the Castle Rock Petenwell Lakes Association, 60 square miles of fun on the water, castlerock-petenwell.com. If our TV show Outdoor Wisconsin is not airing where you live, now you can always watch past episodes at milwaukeepbs.org. And the last several years of the Deer Hunt Wisconsin TV show are archived on the Deer Hunt Wisconsin TV YouTube channel. And if you missed any dates, websites, or phone numbers we mentioned, you can always listen online at lake-link.com/radio. And you can subscribe to our podcast there or download any episode going back a year or so. And our show is also available as a podcast on other platforms, including the Outdoor News website, outdoornews.com/podcasts. You can find Jeff Kelm on social media at Hardwater Jeff, and find me at Dan Small Outdoors. Well, we're down to two spots left on my trip to Lake of the Woods in September. Only two vacancies left, so if you're interested, grab a buddy and sign up today so that you get your spot reserved. We'll enjoy 4 nights in private cabins on a private island, 3 full days of guided fishing with native guides who prepare our shore lunch of the walleyes that we catch, and don't worry, you can take fish home as well. We always do. You can learn more if you go to blackisland.com. Click on Trips and look for my name. That's blackisland.com. Sign up soon because those last two spots won't last. I'll be a guest on Midwest Grillin' with Mad Dog and Merrill this weekend. We taped an episode last week up on Lac Coeur d'Alene with some help from the Hayward Lakes area, and Mad Dog and Merrill grilled some wild turkey breast and perch fillets, and we talked about the Hayward area and the Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame. Midwest Grillin' airs on more than 140 stations in 35 states, including a bunch in Wisconsin, so there ought to be one near you. For details, visit maddogandmerrill.com, maddogandmerrill.com, and look for their schedule. I've known those guys for 40 years, and this is the first time we've worked together, though, on TV. We had a blast with Mad Dog and Merrill cooking and their musical pal, Fast Freddy, keeping pace with some jivey keyboard music as well. Hope you enjoy the show. And if you're looking for a place to stay in Burnett County over Memorial Weekend, check out a new Airbnb in Danbury. I stayed at one of their houses for the governor's fishing opener, and now they've got a very nice tiny house available right in Danbury. Go to airbnb.com/h/riverrockinn, and that's in with one N. Or call Andrew at 651-675-7480. 651-675-7480. The DNR is accepting shooting range grant applications through July 15th. They have $800,000 available to create safe and accessible firearm and archery shooting opportunities for the public. Funding comes from the Pittman-Robertson excise tax on firearms and ammunition. It's available if people have a range that they want to upgrade or if you want to start a new range. For information, visit the DNR website, keywords, Shooting Range Grant Program. Our theme music is by Warren Nelson. Warren's next concert is this Saturday, and for many listeners, that's tonight, May 18th at 7:30 p.m., and it's a special one. This time, they're focusing on Outdoor Wisconsin. They'll be playing the original Outdoor Wisconsin theme song, and Warren will tell a story of how the song was written and recorded way back in October of 1984. For more information or to find out about this performance in Washburn at the Harbor Table, go to warrennelson.com. Again, that's Saturday, May 18th, 7:30 p.m. at the Harbor Table in Washburn. I'm Dan Small. I think Jeff Kelm will be back next week. Get outside this weekend, folks, and be sure to join us again next week for Outdoors Radio.
When my lazy Ike is just too lazy to lure, when the worms go dry in the coffee can, honey, I'll be trolling.